we can advertise in other places for a lot cheaper, and maybe we get better bang for our buck.
Like Trailer Junkies Podcast.
Like if Fandango wanted to come to us, they know that there are a lot of moviegoers that are listening to our podcast. So just saying.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
All right, we have the Willets this week. Hey, Ted Nan.
Hey, Jimmy.
Hello, Jimmy.
What's happening? So you guys are on vacation for a weekend, huh?
We're doing the Memorial Day in Los Gatos per usual. I don't know how many years we've been doing this, but it feels like a few.
I think it's our fourth Memorial Day here.
Fourth Memorial Day in a row. It's pretty regular because the kids were going over the weekend and they were saying, so we'll go for the weekend. We'll do the aquarium, and then on Sunday, we'll go to the farmer's market, and we'll win the basket, and then we'll come home. And I'm like, you know that winning the basket, just because we did that last year, doesn't mean we'll enter, and then we're going to win the basket every year.
What's the basket?
Yeah. It's a huge basket of farmer's markets goodies. I think it was like $300 to $400 worth of fruits and vegetables.
Amazing.
I'll put a still of the winning cornucopia, literally cornucopia, in our show notes this week. So you can see what we won last year. And then you can wish us luck and hopefully we won next year. And that'll be my good news for next week if we did.
Not next year. Tomorrow. We'll win tomorrow.
This year.
Very cool. So did you eat all of your veggies before they rotted?
Yes.
Yes. It took I'm not going to lie to you. I was probably making a meal, three meals a day, each meal with 2 to 3 things from the basket, not only fruits, vegetables, but herbs, a loaf of bread, and
I mean, we charted out pretty well. We were like, all right, this will spoil the fastest. This we can, you know, shelve. So we did it very scientifically.
Scientific veggie eating. All right, so you guys are up in Los Gatos for a getaway, so that's cool.
Yeah.
It's a little chilly up here.
It was cold during the morning, and then we came home early from the aquarium, the Monterey Bay Aquarium, and then we went and saw Solo. We saw Solo tonight. Right while my phone was getting fixed. So there's an Apple store in Los Gatos, and it's 2 doors down from the Los Gatos Theater. So dropped off the phone to get the battery replaced and then went in to see the movie, came out, picked up my phone. It was an amazing, you know, that's how you get stuff done in small towns. It's kind of beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, we're going tomorrow. We're seeing it RPX, which is like Edwards IMAX or whatever.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, looking forward. We already pre-purchased our tickets.
Do you have assigned seats in that?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we got like middle, like, I don't know, best seats in the house kind of a thing. Because we were one of the first people to...
And I saw on Instagram, Frank and Barbara there, so they'll be watching the kids tomorrow?
Yep. That's the plan. So then Clarissa and I can get away to watch some Star Wars action.
Awesome. So we'll save all the spoilers for next week.
Sure thing. Yeah, sure thing. So, and there are spoilers, I take it?
Well, I mean, of course, there's going to be, you know,
well, yeah, there are
people die, ones. People live, you know.
Wait, what?
All spoilers. No. So this week, Jimmy, what you're going to see that tomorrow, but what else for what's going on with you this week?
Well, you know, there was talk a couple episodes back about the kegerator taking a dump on me.
That's right.
So yesterday went to Home Depot, got another chest freezer, turned it in. Well, kegerator is like a refrigerator keg thing. Well, this is a keezer because it's a freezer kegerator. Well, it's a freezer keg thing. So it's, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, so Frank and I did the top and we siliconed it, got all our holes drilled in the fascia that I built, and I used flooring to stain it all nice, and, you know, it's, yeah, once I get it up, we'll take some pictures, you know, or I'm almost finished. I'm going to get the gauges hung on the wall. I got chalkboard paint so I can
so you can write what it is, and
yeah, and it's color coded to the tapper handles, and I mean, I'm pretty dialed in with it. So
upgrade from last one, then.
No, I wouldn't say it's an upgrade. It's just I'm doing it slightly different. It's mostly the same exact thing.
It's a super nerdy of you, I'm just going to say.
Hey, I take beer consumption seriously.
Obviously.
Almost as seriously as we take trailers.
Exactly, yeah. I'm a kegerator junkie, or I don't know, whatever. But
the next podcast.
So, yeah, we got, you know, I got that done, you know, and again, you know, Frank and Barbara are here, had a good dinner tonight at this place, a little plug for the Bottlist in Buellton. Awesome food. I mean, the food was like really incredible.
Buellton's got a bit of a scene there, huh? They've got some gastro pubs and gastro places. It's like, I think Sideways did the good business in Buellton.
Yeah, you turn down Industrial Way, and then you have Figaro Mountain Brewery, and there's all these winery, little wine kind of... It's almost kind of like a small version of Lompoc's Wine Ghetto, you know? It's just all these like, I was going to say connexes. I mean, they're almost like little warehouses.
Oh, totally. They got roll doors. Half of them have roll doors.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, hey, it's good wine, and they're proud of them for the prices they charge half the time. But anyway... Anyway, so, okay, this week, Ted, you threw a curveball at me.
I did.
I don't know what to make of it.
So last week, I was hedging a little bit. I was on the fence, and I was like, is it too inside LA to talk about the upfronts? Because the upfronts happened 2 weeks ago now. But now that there's a full journalistic release of coverage on the upfronts, I felt it was safe. All the upfronts are basically on YouTube for everyone's consumption.
Yeah.
So I figured it was a safe time and space to get into what the upfronts are and what they have in store for the future. And kind of, it really kind of showcases what these four big media companies are forecasting for the next year as far as the way that they're packaging and selling their wares for the linear broadcast space.
So who are the four? I mean, okay, CBS, NBC, ABC, and then what, Fox?
Fox and CW. And
yeah, so the reason Anne is here, you know, usually it's just you and me, Jimmy, and I was pitching a little bit on the way up to Los Gatos here. And as I started to explain to the children what the upfronts were, Anne started to correct me, and I was like, all right, well, you just won yourself a little guest spot on our podcast because you gave a much more concise description of what the upfronts were, because to me, the upfronts has changed a lot over the years, but Anne has a good historical anchor on what the upfronts was. So Anne, you can give us your historical reference and maybe your why people should even listen to you on your personal.
So if I may interject briefly, go ahead. Why are they called upfronts, or are you going to get to that?
I'm going to get to that.
Okay, go for your whole description. But
yeah, because, you know, Ted and I'll talk on Slack throughout the week, and he throws out this thing upfronts, and I'm thinking like PBS Frontline, you know, like I have no idea what he's talking about. I'm like, whatever, I'll just go with it. And then I see all this like CBS stuff. I'm like, why is he doing like just CBS this week?
And the trailers are so long, right?
First complaint right there, 5 minute trailers. I mean, come on, I don't have that kind of time.
Let me stop you before you lament too much. So traditionally what an upfront is, and the reason I can speak to this is because I don't know if you know, Jimmy, I used to work for a media company, and a media company sometimes can overlap with an advertising company, but initially they were two very separate entities. A media company would tell you as a studio or a television company what time of day, what day of week, and what demographic you're advertising to. So if you have an hour-long show, there are three breaks in the show, generally around the 15-minute mark, the 30-minute mark, and the 45-minute mark. And during that break, the break is 3 to 5 minutes. There's an A, B, and C position. When you hit your break time, generally, you always want to be in the A position. But then when TiVo came out, people...
Who's you, though?
You as the...
The advertisers.
The advertiser, okay. Or... Yeah, I would say the advertiser.
Yes.
And then when you would come out of the break after TiVo came around, people wanted to be in the C position because when you came out of that fast forward mode, it would grab 1 to 2 seconds. So you would get that back end plug for your show, your movie, whatever your thing is. So a media company didn't tell you what to put on air. They just told you where and when. And media isn't just television. It's also radio. It's bus stops. It's magazines. It's newspaper.
Billboards.
Billboards. It's a saturation of the marketing.
Popcorn cups.
Well, it's the way like what you call broadcasting, right? You're throwing out a cast to a broad audience, hoping to capture some people.
Right.
And my problem with how it's dealt with today is early awareness. If you're pushing your show, your movie super early, then in my opinion, there is a problem with your product. If your whatever it is, your show, your movie, if it can stand alone, your awareness doesn't need to start 6 to 8 months in advance of the launch date.
This is where I laugh because I differ from Anne. I think long pre-awareness just means that you have a bigger budget, and the bigger budget makes executives scared, and scared executives like to spend money and see money spent early on. And that's why as you go around Burbank and you go around LA, you see tons of out of home. You see tons of billboards and bus
enclosures. People don't know what out of home is.
No, I've explained out of home on this podcast a number of times. Jimmy, do you know what out of home is?
Yeah, it's any advertising that doesn't happen like on television or whatever, right?
It's usually print. It's usually print. We've talked about
bus
enclosures.
Sides of
buses. Yes.
Yeah.
Bus, yeah.
See, on the top of cabs.
I told you, Jimmy's a good sample because he's a listener of the podcast, and that's who we're talking to.
Let me ask you something, though, Anne. So in Ted's defense, maybe not his defense, but in the way Ted sees the world of what you're talking about, he enjoys, and we review teaser trailers, but the teaser trailer might come out like 9 months ahead or something, like Mortal Engines, right? There's nothing there. So then the regular trailer might not come out until 6 months after the teaser. But what you're saying is if you have to tease it 9 months out, then you don't have a good product.
Yeah,
that is my opinion. And
okay,
if you drop something, so in that A, B, and C position, there is a slot for a 30, a 60, and a 90-second ad, whatever your ad is, if it's radio, television.
Not anymore. Now it's like a 10, 20, 15, 10, 20, 30, 15, 30. You know, the 15, 30 space is what the new ad space is. Because it's all about GRP. You don't want to go into GRPs. But it's all about, you know, it's about the instances that you can put a product in front of somebody. So as the clock of an hour-long program compresses, and as you need to get more, as the viewers diminish and broadcast, and you need to get more eyeballs into those viewings, those 60-second spots are gone. 30 seconds, 15 seconds is where you're going to get the impressions you need to, you know, continue to sell at the rates you're selling.
And 60 seconds seems so long nowadays for that.
It's incredibly long. You know, TV spots, even when they were hitting, were 30 seconds, you know.
Right, right.
So the history of the upfronts originally started literally the week of Labor Day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Then with the Memorial Day. Yes. I apologize. Memorial Day. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And historically, NBC held the Monday night spot because they were king of the ratings with Seinfeld, with Friends.
Wasn't Seinfeld a Thursday night show though?
No, Monday. So this is for the week of the last week in May.
Okay.
All of the advertisers and the networks would get together in New York City, and they would say, "There's only one pool of advertisers."
Oh, I follow you now. Okay.
But we're gonna fall in line. And what Anne's saying is on Monday NBC would take these advertisers and go ahead.
And the media corporation, and they would wine and dine them.
Sure, yeah.
Tuesday was historically ABC, And historically, CBS was on Wednesday. Then when you have Fox coming in, ABC's Tuesday got split with Fox during the morning. And then with the CW, they moved into the Thursday slot. So this week leading up to Labor Day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you would have these day-long events of...
Memorial Day.
Did I say Labor Day again? I'm so sorry. Memorial Day, yes.
Take a drink, but you're done. I need a drink. Done.
I've had a lot of drinks already. So you would have a series of pre-screenings, which are anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes to half an hour to a full episode that you're showing to the media companies as well as the advertising agencies who are going to help you build your ad campaign to get the viewership that you need for these programs. When I worked at the media company, and the media company that I worked for was pretty large, the different studios would actually come to our office and host parties, drinks, luncheons, breakfasts, whatever. They'd hand out these elaborate prizes just to try to win you over to get you to be the person that helped them to promote their product. So ABC and Fox ended up splitting Tuesday. CW moved to Thursday. Then they would have a simulcast. Like, everything took place at the Kennedy Center in New York, and there would be a split feed that was live to take place for the viewers in LA. Why are you making that face?
Kennedy Center?
Yes.
New York Kennedy Center?
Yes.
Oh.
And part of the...
Well, can I stop you there for 1 second? So they come in, they wine and dine, they get all the advertisers in front and everything. Now, are these for pilots and first run episodes for seasons, or are these returning shows, all the above?
They're giving you all the whole... They're giving you the whole slate. So they'll
the
have
whole lineup.
They'll give you the executive, and the executive will say... That show that you advertised on last year is doing gangbusters. So we're bringing it back and we're continuing that. But here's our new show that you should really get excited about. And all of the purchasing for the upcoming fall season. So we're talking about end of May. And then all of these TV shows were based on a football schedule and a car automotive schedule. So the basics of television is all based on huge advertisers.
Sure.
So yeah. So the car companies come out with their cars in September for the following year. So September is also the beginning of football season. So the beginning of football season and when the car companies came out, it's a chicken and egg thing. I don't know which was first, but it kind of made that back to school for time frame, that September, October time frame, the beginning of media selling for the next year. So in May, they're trying to wrap up all of the fall lineup. They're locking all the fall lineup, the fall pilots, and the fall schedule. And then they're trying to sell all of that airtime to the advertisers, to the Toyotas, to the Hondas, to the Fords, as well as the Cloroxes and the big, what is that called? CPG? I don't know what it stands for. Consumer? I don't know.
Gross.
Yeah. CPG stuff. So all of the places that sell anything that you see advertisements for get sold up front. There it is.
So they're showing you up front.
Consumer packaged goods?
Yeah.
Consumer packaged goods.
Yeah.
So the term up front is they're showing you up front before the fall what they have on the slate. We want to get you excited. We want to get you hyped. We want you to be as excited about what we have up front right now for the fall. And so generally, when they show you in May, they give you a sprinkle in June, a bigger sprinkle in July, and then in August is the full court press, so to speak, with the advertising that this is going to roll out. And this is why I keep saying Labor Day, because generally these shows coincide with the return to school after summer. People are home and then they can get their viewership back, because viewership generally drops off between Memorial Day and Labor Day, because you've got kids in school, you've got kids out of school, you're traveling, you're just not at home.
You're not into the routine of a weekly work routine that drives viewership.
Well, and daylight goes longer, so people are out, you know, all that stuff.
Yes. Yeah,
exactly.
And part of this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday event are these huge parties that they would have in the evening. And you would see the programming during the day. And then at night, they would have these elaborate dinners and cocktail parties that were very exclusive. You had to have an invitation. You had to have your name on a list. They would have huge headliner stars performing, comedians, drinks flowing, the whole nine yards. But in
checkbooks out.
And in recent years, they've scaled back considerably because now a lot of studios do double duties. They do television as well as movies. So now ABC advertised their Tuesday as ABC Freeform. I believe the, is it UPN? Or TNT?
No, CW.
No, it's, what's USA? USA and TNT?
USA is part of the Universal. So NBC, NBC, Universal Cable Networks Group, all of those. That's all the Chiller, Bravo, USA, all of that.
And so even the scale, like, so now they've doubled up on their, on who they're presenting with, and they've scaled back considerably on the parties that they're throwing.
And like this year, NBC, I think, did a 30 Rock, right? And it's, you know, it's inside inside a big Radio City Music Hall, I think, was ABC. And you still pull out your executives, but you put everybody on a stage. And there's a little less, everything's scaled back.
It's not as much pomp and circumstance because when you would launch new shows, like when Seinfeld and Friends and ER carried that Thursday night lineup, they would pull out the stars from Friends. You would have Jennifer Aniston come out. You'd have George Clooney come out. You'd have these people out on stage for 5-10 minutes to say how much they love the show. And that was network-wide, so that would be NBC, ABC, CBS. Yeah. Yeah. And so they would just try to sell their product to people.
Yeah, and you still have Roseanne coming out and doing her spiel because she did Gangbusters when she came back. So I think the reason I brought up the CPG was this interaction is advertisers and ad buyers and media companies all getting together in this space, right? So you have the buyers, which is the media group that Anne is talking about. You have the sellers with the CPG and the automotive and all the different spaces that are all the consumer products that are out there. And then you have the media corporations that have things that people want to watch for free. And in return, people are going to watch commercials with that free content, that quote unquote, air quotes, free content. Because of the disruptors like streaming services, like we talked about National Streaming Day last week. Woo!
Yeah.
you have disruptors both in the Netflix Hulu space, and then you also have CPG disruptors like Walmart and Amazon, because Walmart and Amazon's are driving consumers' habits so deeply that advertisers are more hesitant to spend money on linear television because they don't know whether their consumers are consuming things because Amazon is pushing it to them, or, you know, Netflix doesn't have any ads on it, or Hulu has a different set of ads on it. You know, so there's a lot of different factors that's going into the calculus of how much these things are worth. When you have one source of linear broadcast, then it's a lot easier for us for Toyota to write a big check and say, we're going to put a lot of advertising on your stuff because, you know, because we believe in it. So I think there's a slippage in that. And then there's also slippage in, like, we can advertise in other places for a lot cheaper and maybe we get better bang for our buck.
Like Trailer Junkies Podcast.
Like, if Fandango wanted to come to us, they know that there are a lot of moviegoers that are listening to our podcast. So just saying.
You kind of got ahead of me a little bit from what I wanted to say. The one of the questions I have is, so in this current age of binge watching and mass, what is it, like, streaming and getting in all of this content, like you said, I mean, people want to watch television for free. So in that case, they're going to take commercials. I'd argue a little bit against that because you're paying a cable provider, you know, for what it's worth, you know, $150 a month, let's say, and you're still being fed commercial television.
But what's the percentage of people cutting the cord because of that? That's an astronomical fee, right?
Well, yeah. And so now you're looking, maybe they move over to Netflix or HBO or something. And even if you're spending the same amount at the end, you're still limiting the amount of commercials that you're viewing or seeing in between programming. So how long do you guys think that this upfront model or the network model currently with the 30-second spots, you know, the ABC and all this kind of stuff you were talking about?
Yeah.
How long into the future is this going to be played out, do you think, or do you see it going?
What do you think? We'll give her prediction.
I personally think that it's so ingrained in the television culture that it will be very difficult to move away from it. And
on the viewer side or on the content provider side?
On the content provider side, because...
So they don't want to move away because old habits die hard.
Yes and no. Old habits die hard, but you see that they're making the turn around the corner and that they're doubling up on days of the week like ABC and Fox, but that's been going on for almost 30 years now. But they're doubling up on, now it's ABC Freeform. Like, you know, Freeform launched, what, 2 years ago?
I don't even know what that is. What is that?
Freeform's, it's the millennial, out of the new teen network.
The 25 to, I think...
No, it's much younger than that. I think it's like 16 to 25.
It's programming for that age bracket.
It's like CW Light, some people call it.
CW Light. So I think that's how they're making the change. But what they're doing has still remained the same. They're still trying to get you to come and see this up front before somebody else sees it. And then it's word of mouth. So I, working in an ad agency, I saw stuff and then I would come home to Ted and be like, oh my God, you can't believe what I saw today. And this was terrible. Or I saw this really great show. We should try to pencil it in to our television viewing. And as you know, as you were saying, in this new culture where you can binge watch or you can record something and watch it later, it's really difficult to grab the viewership. So for them to give it up totally, I don't think is going to happen. I think they're going to have to adapt over time as to how to grab the demographic that they're looking for. Well, if that makes any sense.
I think it's funny too. It's telling too that over the past 10 years, they've really tried to change the way upfronts have been done. And at NBC, they were trying to do upfronts where Conan was hosting. This is like 10, 12 years ago. This is NBC. So Conan hosted and they actually like walked people through like an experience. So it became experiential. They were trying different things. Now NBC is saying they want shorter commercial breaks, less commercials. So I don't know what that means. They're trying to compete with streaming services that have no commercials. So that's, when you talk about HBO and Netflix, people are paying for things again, but people aren't paying for the cost of the media. They're paying a subsidized amount, and they're subsidized because Netflix believes that they can, you know, gather data and craft a more perfect piece of media for the data that they're gathering. So that $10 a month is completely subsidized with the fact that you're giving over your viewing habits to them.
Well, right. You become the product.
Yeah. And then Hulu is a separate thing because Hulu is owned by all of the major networks together and they have advertising on it and you can...
Reluctantly, I'm sure.
Yeah. And then they have advertising, but you can opt out of the advertising by paying a higher amount. But that too is subsidized. It isn't the actual cost of the media that you're consuming. You know, like the advertising and the cable providers' fees, those kind of put together a better picture of what an actual TV show costs to make, you know? Because when you talk about, what was it? It was House of Cards. It cost $1 million an episode. You know, if they took that per the number, like Netflix would never tell you how many actual people watched House of Cards because that's their information. And an insight into that information is actually fodder you could use against them. But if they just have subscribers and then they divide it over the number of subscribers, then it becomes a much smaller amount. But I doubt every single subscriber to Netflix watches House of Cards.
Right, right.
Right? But they give you two data points, and reluctantly so. I don't even think they wanted that $1 million per episode thing to get out about how much it costs to make a piece of television that they're making. But that got out, and then, you know, their subscriber thing is how they drive their stock price. So they have very few data points that they're driving their stock price on. When you talk about ABC and Comcast, NBC, those two are such conglomerates that they have such a vast holdings of different kinds that their stock price is a matrix of calculus that is beyond any person's kind of like, you couldn't look at it. You couldn't look at it and you couldn't stand far enough away from it and say, this is healthy, that's unhealthy. You know, sure. So it's mojo. It's like, you know, what are you selling there? You're selling a lot of different factors and, you know, you're hoping that you believe in the executive structure in that company. The reason I picked CBS for our deep dive this week, and it feels like they're pretending like nothing has ever changed, and every single thing that they have in their upfront felt like something that has been done before, and it's like we're not even going to pretend that these things have changed. And some of it's exciting to see again because I felt the nostalgia in me, and you know, ABC did it last year very successfully with Roseanne. So they leaned into that hardcore with Roseanne at the upfronts this year. They mentioned it over and over and over again. So it makes sense that CBS with their clientele, and it's really kind of a slap in the face to Viacom. The Redstones are the parent company, the owning family of both Viacom and CBS. Leslie Moonves is the head CEO, the head exec over at CBS, and he's having a fight with Sumner Redstone's daughter right now, and it's coming out in the public, and the board tried to oust the Redstones, and she got an injunction against CBS to say they couldn't vote to oust the Redstone family. So it's going back and forth. CBS has really dug in, and I think Leslie Moonves has dug in, and he's decided that we're going to continue down this path until it isn't successful anymore. And you watch Big Bang Theory, so you know what I mean? It's like they have a successful thing going, so they're going to ride this horse until they aren't the leaders anymore.
The time slot that is the biggest time slot is 8 to 8:30, 8:30 to 9, and then 9 to 10 originally is how the programming was broken down, 2 half-an-hours and 1 hour-long show. So it's sort of like when we were joking about the Dallas reboot that
Stock and Crest Dallas.
Yes, so that would be your 9 to 10 o'clock slot, and you would have sitcoms in the 8 to 8:30 and 8:30 to 9, and then the 9 to 10 would be your dramatic piece. And you're trying to reach this huge group of people because you think they're going to just leave the TV on and watch their one show, and the other show is going to go on in the background, and you're hoping to grab them into that. So that was the other part of the upfront is, oh, you watched the show you really wanted to watch. How are we going to sort of get you to hang on into the other two pieces that are going to take place during the night?
So then just to summarize, I guess, you know, to see if I kind of grasp what you guys are getting at. So the upfronts essentially are a way to capture marketers and advertisers to say, we're putting out the new shows. We want you to spend your money on these shows. We want you to get excited about them. This is the audience we're trying to capture. And they kind of go along with their dog and pony show.
Yep.
And then come September, we'll see you and all this will play out swimmingly and everybody's going to make money. And this is, you know,
that's it. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That is the line. Yes.
So it's more about capturing advertisers and advertising dollars than it is getting viewers excited about it is kind of the way I see it.
Yes. So that's why these trailers that we're doing this week, are 4 minutes long.
Oh man, they're so long.
Because I think that's what they boiled down to.
Wait, did you have a favorite?
Of what? Of the trailers?
Yeah.
Oh boy, that's a tough one. Well, the quick answer, if I had to, I guess it might be The Neighborhood.
Really?
But otherwise, like, honestly, like, they're all awful, and I'm not going to watch any of them, I'll tell you that.
It's
you
know? Funny because I didn't mind the Murphy Brown, but the whole Magnum P.I., that Robin, that Robin's a female.
Higgins. Higgins is a girl. I love it. That's my favorite one. Magnum P.I. was my favorite one.
But Robin Masters is a, you know, he's a Brit. And then I don't mind that Higgins is the woman, but I don't know, because I guess I'm a kid of the 70s. Like, you're so used to it being that way that
I watched
when
Magnum
you...
P.I.
It was more early 80s, I'd say.
Yeah, you were born in the 70s, too.
Yeah.
But I think nostalgically, I'm just so used to it being a specific way to see it retooled for getting a new demographic. It just bothers me.
Okay. I love that Higgins is a girl. I love that Magnum is Latino. I think as far as market research, it shows like the big, it is the freshest thing on CBS. And yet it's a reboot of a franchise from the early 80s, you know? So I love the idea of like just plug in the demographics of what we want to see today, you know?
I mean, my first complaint is...
Are we switching over to doing the shows? We can do that.
Sure. I mean, I guess I kind of summarized the upfronts.
Yeah.
Just to make sure we had the understanding. And I think, you know, I think we kind of had a pretty strong, brief overview. I mean, I'm sure you can do a much longer episode on that. But, you know, I think we covered it pretty decent. Yeah, getting to Magnum P.I.
Yeah, so we'll just go down the list, right? We'll just go down the list from Magnum P.I. all the way to the end. There's a bunch of them, and they're all 4 to 5 minutes long. So we'll hit Magnum P.I. first, because it's my favorite, and I put it first.
Okay.
And on that note, I'm going to leave you guys. I'm just going to continue to drink my wine and go upstairs.
All right, sounds good. All right, Anne, you have a good night.
Thanks, and if you have any upfront questions, I'll be upstairs. You know where to find me.
All right, we'll give you a text.
Okay, thanks.
Bye, Anne. Right.
Bye, hon.
Yeah, so Ted, the Magnum P.I., the issue that I have there, it struck me too much like the A-Team.
Yes.
And not so much like the Tom Selleck Magnum P.I. And then they get into the soundtrack at the end with the music. And it just seemed way too just out of control as far as, you know, he's jumping off onto the truck, then making the leap for the helicopter. I mean, the other thing, then they kill off Dominic Lombardozzi. I think I said that right. Way too early. I mean, why are you going to tell me that one of the main, you build him up like he's, like a Navy SEAL or something.
Right.
You build him up as like the, one of the top guys in your group. And then like you immediately kill him off.
Right. Well, you got to up the stakes, my friend. You know, this is like,
I guess
high stakes.
Yeah. But
it definitely has an A-Team feel. And I would definitely say that A-Team took some of its DNA from Magnum and created something that was different. So if you're going to go in and retool Magnum P.I., why not steal back from
the
A-Team?
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, and TC was always great, you know? And so I think just like I said, the two biggest factors is making Magnum Latino is
right.
Pitch perfect for our time and space, and making Higgins an attractive woman is amazing too. You know what I mean? Like Higgins to me was just a throwaway character, and sure he was quippy and fun, and he had the Dobermans, and the Dobermans would, you know, attack Magnum, you know, on command, and they still do that. So I think it's phenomenal in its holding to the tropes and the things that brought the nostalgia into it. So I think it's teetering on that beautiful balance of balancing nostalgia with true market research of what people want to see. So I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
One of the biggest complaints I have between this Murphy Brown, FBI, those three especially, the other ones not so much, but the, right. but the first three.
Okay.
Is one of my biggest complaints with just movies and Hollywood in general is that there's not a lot of new ideas.
Yeah.
You know, there are new ideas for sure. Many of the ideas come from book authors and they're how do you call it? Like they're reimagined, I guess, movies from books and so on.
Yeah.
But the biggest complaint I have is, and I think you mentioned it like a while back, is Hollywood gets into their like a pattern. All of a sudden, you know, like there's just big cat movies everywhere, or there's destroy the world movies everywhere. There's post-apocalyptic movies everywhere. Like there's like these trends that play out.
Right.
I mean, I guess it's a formula that they're playing into, but rather than somebody just reaching out and doing something risky, it's like people are risk averse. They don't want to spend money on things that they're not going to guarantee that they're going to get an immediate income right back at them, you know? So in other words, make as much money as you can within the first few weeks of whatever it is, and then who cares where it goes or what it is or what kind of legacy or any of that stuff.
Yeah. And I think, so I think this is where the fact that we talked about upfronts before we talked about these trailers is important, because when we're talking about these trailers, although they end up on YouTube and they end up in front of the consumers, their main purpose and the main goal and the reason they're 4 minutes long is because they're being put in front of people with their checkbooks that are going to write million-dollar checks, millions of dollars in checks to the media, to the, you know, to these production companies producing and airing these shows. So I think those first three, particularly the first three shows, show that CBS says, if you want to be comforted, we can comfort you. We'll comfort you and we'll tell you that we have a healthy viewership, and the healthy viewership that tunes in every week to see Big Bang Theory and I don't know what else is on CSI or Criminal Minds or whatever.
Right, right.
These people will tune in to watch those shows. And then we're going to pepper these new shows in. And guess what? They're not going to change the channel. And I think that's the thing that CBS has over the other companies. And I think that's why when you say Hulu's owned by the major companies, I don't think CBS has stake in that. CBS has CBS All Access, which is where they put their Star Trek Discovery show on. And it was only on Discovery. And then internationally was sold by Netflix. So that was a joint ownership between Netflix and CBS. Not Netflix and Viacom. So there's a lot of different models of how people are doing media in the future.
Well, and a lot of partnerships.
A lot of partnerships, you know, Marvel has a partnership with Netflix, you know, ABC has a huge part, you know, ABC Disney has a big partnership with Netflix that's, you know, sunsetting. So everything was all about harvesting the most viewership. And I think because harvesting the most viewership was the end goal, that's why people were doing this. And now as the paradigm shifts to like this gathering data,
right?
You know, how many emails did you get this week about the data?
GDPR.
GDPR.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing that is, you know, it's a little bit of Black Mirror seeping into our current lives.
And what's amazing, it's a European Union law.
Yeah.
That I have to be bombarded with. I mean, it's just amazing, like how, you know, a law changes one place and they just want to jump on the bandwagon everywhere.
Well, no, I mean, these are international companies and it's come, you know, after Europe, California will pass laws too. You know, I mean, I think California leads America down a lot of regulations. You know, there's tons of props that are in California first. And then because auto manufacturers have to deal with, you know, exhaust emissions for California standards,
they do it for everybody.
They do it for everybody because it's cheaper to do it for everybody than to say, oh, these cars pass California emissions and these cars don't. You know what I mean?
Well, here's what pisses me off. When I get all these emails and they say, we value your privacy. Well, if you did, it wouldn't take legislation to make changes. You would have just already have done it if you truly valued my privacy. But right, so, right. Yeah, I mean, come on. Who are you fooling? So Murphy Brown, let's jump to that one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun way to reintroduce the cast. But my, I guess the biggest question I have is what's the demographic and the audience they're after?
To me, it's the demographic to me are people that literally it's everybody who's not watching or so. I think Murphy Brown is the answer to Roseanne. So Roseanne said, oh, we're going to bring back Roseanne. And guess what? Roseanne's like a Trump supporter. And we're going to ride that out because Trump did polarize people. But guess what? He also energized people and people wanted to hear and say things that he was saying. So the fact that Roseanne was a Trump supporter became like a tentpole of the first season, like as far as in the PR of the season. Now, this Murphy Brown super trailer, the upfront trailer, it feels like it's begging to be relevant. It's like, guess what, guys? We were so relevant that we were talking about Trump, what, 20 years, 15, 20 years ago, and we hated him. We hated him back then so much
right.
That we're going to show you clips of our show from 20 years. I don't know how many years
I thought
ago.
that was very good to go back into the archive.
Right.
And to pull out clips that if it wasn't from 20 years ago,
it could be from today.
It would be like, I just watched it last night.
Right. And then like, so to the untrained viewer that, or to the non-critical viewer, to the casual viewer, it plays really well. I think to this room, maybe it plays well because I think people want to be comforted. So I think it's a comforting thing to say, hey, this is the pitch we have. We're going to pitch this out to the everyman, and everyman's going to want to watch it because they're upset because there is a polarized set that's against Trump, and maybe we'll capture them the same way Roseanne captured the Trump set, you know?
Yeah.
And I think Roseanne's an interesting, more complex than I'm making it. You know, the things that they've captured has definitely been gone above and beyond just Trump. But with its internal problems, with its showrunner, with Whitney not staying on and things like that, I think that shows there's a little more going on there than what we were told it was going to be scaled back. So Murphy Brown's like hitting you over the head with how much she's going to be into politics, into news, into current events, into Me Too movement. It's going to be into everything. And it feels like, you know, we were ahead of our time, but now we're going to hit the wave right at its, you know, at its peak, and we're going to live in the barrel, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting, but to me it hit it too many times, and it was just like, oh, okay, we get it. You were anti-Trump before it was cool to be anti-Trump. When everyone else was laughing at Trump, you were taking him seriously.
Agreed. Yeah.
And then to round it out, FBI, I love Missy. I loved her in Reaper. She played a great girlfriend. But to me, this is just a rehash of Quantico. And if Quantico doesn't work with a attractive recruit, young FBI agent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't see how this is going to work with a young Canadian FBI agent, you know?
Well, and I found it, I mean, it's a little bit different, obviously, but I found it similar to like 24. Obviously, yeah. It's not playing out in a 24-hour period.
Right.
But meaning there's really nothing new to the story.
Oh, and then the Dick Wolf cell is hardcore all over this. So it's like, if you like Law & Order, then
exactly.
This Law & Order executive made a show for you. And it's got the overarching story of a 24. And I bet from week to week, we'll have a procedural for you as well. So it'll be a little cross between what you're saying, 24 and Law & Order, you know? So again, very comforting.
Exactly. Yeah. And the reason I say it reminds me of 24 is because you have to find the guy with the bomb, then you think you have him. He fakes you out, but then later you find out that you actually faked him out, and then they just give away the entire season, it seems.
Well, and then giving away the entire season is okay in this context, because these are Unfun trailers, you know. I think that's a forgivable offense in a trailer that goes for 4 minutes and is told to advertisers, because advertisers want to know how you're going to pay it off. If you put a whole season arc in front of an advertiser, then they're more apt to buy in or not buy in. They don't want to be caught off guard. They're not watching it in anticipation of wanting to see the season.
Right.
They want to know that you have enough material that you're going to make it through a whole season and keep people hooked for a whole season, because you're asking them for a check for a whole season. You're not asking them to pay as you go.
Yeah, they don't want cliffhangers and
no.
and surprises, and like you said, to be caught off guard, and then they spent all that money and the show goes nowhere.
Right.
You know, overall, I think FBI looks cool. But I think it's a show that's been done. It's already been done before. I mean, I don't see much new to it.
It's been done ad nauseum. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Dick Wolf has had tons of success. And now the fact that he's jumping from NBC to CBS, I think that says something. And then the fact that Quantico, I think Quantico is finishing it out, and it wasn't renewed. So I think that shows more of a fact that this kind of procedural slash overarching thing isn't going to really like endear new viewers, you know? I'm sure they want to package this with your Criminal Intent or your CSI, and you put it in front of that, and it's, you know, maybe that's a winning combo for a, you know, a 9 p.m., 10 p.m.
And yeah, it does roll in a number of different shows into the one show, but I think I'm going to pass on this one too. So God Friended Me.
So I wanted to say God Friended Me is a friend of our pod, because this guy's a podcaster, and I think there need to be more podcasters in linear broadcast television.
Yeah, I would say of the next three that we're going to do are different, and they're not into the like kind of the rehashing of an old story.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is a little bit different play. I don't know how, I mean, and here they don't really give away the end to say who is the guy on Facebook friending him and all this, who is playing God or whatever. It leads you to think that maybe it is God or something. I think it tries to sell the story too hard that everything that happens has a purpose in life and there's no random events ever. But then again, I think you can make the argument that there's a lot of non-random events, because we're all like watching each other's movements on Google Maps and everything. We're like, oh man, my buddy's going over there. I really don't feel like seeing him today, so I'm going to go this way.
I liked it. So I think, you know, what, like we said, it does what a pilot episode should do. So to me, this was a super trailer, an upfront trailer for a pilot episode. So they had a whole pilot episode to cut from, and they cut these high points from these critical turning points within a pilot episode to sell, you know, to sell the wonder of what's going on here.
Yeah, this one doesn't give it away.
It doesn't give away the ending.
But
it does.
I mean.
It gives away the plot points of the pilot. And the pilot is an episode that is meant to hook the viewer, the consumer that is the viewer. So that's the thing that they're selling. You know, whereas the other one said, here, we're going to sell you the fact that we can keep this going for a whole season. So we're going to give the whole thing, give you the whole store as an upfront trailer. This upfront trailer is like, hey, this is our pilot. And guess what? We'll keep people on the hook every week, because we're never going to give this up, or it's going to be the very end. And it doesn't matter who's sending these texts, because Olivia Pope's dad could send them. You know what I mean? It's like,
right.
You know, that answer to that question is not as important as the sum of all the parts that lead up to it. So I think it's interesting to take a podcaster who podcasts about not having faith, and then inject him with these coincidences that drive, that are driven by, you know, faith, and then have him come to terms with that in a podcast, which is a, you know, a social media medium with content provided. So it's like this whole very meta kind of space for them. So that's why I think this is probably the most out of script for CBS is this God Friend and Me.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it has a cool way of bringing in conflict, like interpersonal conflict of, you know, someone's faith or not faith, depending on, you know, and probably how they grew up, and trying to either alleviate that guilt of not believing or coming to terms with, you know, and maybe even on the father's side to say like, well, my kid, this is how I raised him. This is what I do for, you know, my, to earn gainful employment, let's say.
Yeah.
And he's left the faith, or he's the prodigal son, or whatever it might be. And then in a way, he's almost finding his way back around, not sure what the reasons are behind everything, but he sees these random events, or that what seemingly are random events that keep connecting themselves to other random events.
Right.
And then just that internal struggle that he's dealing with throughout the podcast.
Right. So last year, Jason Ritter was in a show on ABC, and it was called Kevin Probably Saves the World. And that was another thing where this typical normal guy out in the world is visited. And in this sense, it was a little more fantasy, a little less about faith. And it was about him being the second coming or something about that. So celestial being, which is perfectly played by Yvette.
And who knows, maybe it's George Burns. I mean, you know, wasn't he God?
He was God, yes.
Yeah. All right. And then what's next?
So this is the next one is The Neighborhood, and that was your favorite?
Well, I mean, out of all of them, I didn't really have a favorite, but the reason I think I liked it is because, well, first of all, they forgot There Goes right before The Neighborhood. No, I just thought it was a fun twist on a white family moving into a black neighborhood, you know, and it kind of like flipped the tables. And like growing up in Chicago, I experienced white flight. And every time a black family moves in, literally people would put their houses up for sale and they want to move out and they got to get out before the property values drop. And I mean, it's just insane.
Well, I mean, Archie Bunker attacked.
I totally thought of Archie Bunker.
It was like an Archie Bunker 100% ripoff, you know. When Anne and I were back in DC, she saw Othello and the Shakespearean play, and they did Othello in the Park, outdoors, right? And they did a reverse Othello where Patrick Stewart played Othello. And the whole rest of the cast was black. And I thought it was like, great. And then this neighborhood felt to me like this is Archie Bunker, except everybody is black except for the Johnson family. The Johnson family, they should have called them the Jeffersons. It would have been so much more perfect.
I thought the same thing. If they called it the Jeffersons, like that would have just blew my doors off. And then maybe I would have watched it, but... But overall, the reason I thought I would say I enjoyed this one is for that exact reason, that it was just a complete turn the table on what we typically would see and say, and the way people behave and the way culture, American culture and society kind of reacts to these things. And now it's just the exact opposite of an affluent black neighborhood. And here comes like this white couple, you know, and they move in with their, you know, whatever it is. And just everything they were talking about, it was just, I thought it was clever.
No, it's well done.
And I could see the writing each week being pretty funny.
Oh, and it's so well acted, you know, I think.
Right.
I think everything about it is going to be of high quality. So, I'd watch it while it's there.
Yeah. And here's the thing. So when you look at the 70s and like we talked Archie Bunker, so Norman Lear writes All in the Family, and he makes Archie Bunker this kind of bigoted, racist sort of a guy who just doesn't like anybody. And And Norman Lear's whole idea was to make it so Archie Bunker was so detestful that he would drive people away from behaving like him. But it almost had that reverse effect because too many people identified with him. So then it kind of caused some, you know, problem, and it had that reaction from society where Norman Lear didn't really kind of foresee. And then, you know, it kind of made for just a strange dynamic with the Archie Bunker character. And I kind of see that possibly happening here too, though, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think the point of it is that what they want to do is make it look so ridiculous that people just turn and become more accepting of others. But who knows? Maybe it's going to have that reverse effect that, you know, we're not really anticipating.
It might calcify their differences rather than, like, showing how ridiculous they are. People could agree with.
Yeah, entrench them in their beliefs than to change their minds, you know? So, I don't know. Like I said, it looks pretty good. And then Happy Together, that also has a racial flip.
I think, so to me, it has a racial element to it. But I think to my reading of this trailer was the fact that they're not going, it's a little more colorblind, a little more about pop celebrity and the fact that, you know, every man's, you know, it's your fish out of water story kind of,
yeah.
where this guy who's, you know, one of the most boring people you could imagine, an accountant, you know, but he's an accountant for somebody who's very famous. So then he's pulled into that world.
Like the Justin Bieber kind of character.
Exactly. And yet it feels, I feel like it has some heart. So I think that's the thing that this might be able to pull off. It's kind of hard to say. They're killing Monday night. So Monday night has The Neighborhood leading in at 8 o'clock hour. Then at 8:30 has Happy Together, and then Magnum PI at 9, and then Bull, which I guess a lot of people like. But it's hard to say, like, you put three new shows at the top of this hour, and there's no anchor from before. Like, if you look at the rest of the week, Friday is kind of like a dead space. They don't even put Saturday on their lineup. But when you look at the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is your sweet spot for TV watching, linear TV watching. And when you're talking about schedules, just the mere fact that we're talking about a schedule and a slate kind of feels quaint.
You know, it totally, I mean? Does, yeah.
But on Tuesday night, they have NCIS leading in, and then FBI in the middle, and then NCIS New Orleans at your 10 o'clock hour. So there's 3-hour procedural shows in a row. It's like an NCIS sandwich, you know, with FBI in the middle. And it's like, if you like NCIS, you're going to love FBI. And we already know the people that are watching this show, so we're not going to mess with that. And then Wednesday night has no new shows on it whatsoever. They have Survivor, SEAL Team, and Criminal Minds. And then big Thursday night is the big night. So I think they're really banking a lot on Murphy Brown, but it's only half an hour. So Big Bang Theory has Young Sheldon after at 8:30, Mom at 9, and then Murphy Brown at 9:30, and then SWAT at your 10 o'clock hour. So this is the day that they really have 4 slots for comedy half hours. And in any other scenario, this Big Bang Theory and Young Sheldon, it's like a double bill. Do you watch Young Sheldon?
No, I've never seen it. And when you look at Big Bang Theory, I mean, we're probably, you know, 2 seasons behind anyway.
Because you're streaming it.
No, they don't stream it. Well, they stream it on CBS, you're right.
But are we, you would stream it?
No, we would typically get it like on Blu-ray or something.
Oh.
You know, but we got rid of discs like a couple of years ago, you know, from Netflix, and they don't put it on streaming. So when we wound up not doing the discs, then we just stopped watching it. And the other side of it too, it's like, I don't know how many seasons. It's like, what is it, in 13th season or something? I mean, it just got to the point I just got tired of it, you know?
Yeah.
And like, at some point, the shows just have to go. I mean, you know, there's just too many seasons. Like, you know, we were talking about The Walking Dead, Clarissa and I, and it's like, if this isn't the last year, I'd be surprised. I mean, like, every episode's just more ridiculous than the next.
Yeah.
And it's like, we get it, you know? There's like bad people people out there. There's The Walking Dead, the biters, the, you know, whatever you want to call them, the, you know, the walkers and the draggers, and they have every name other than zombie, right?
Right.
And after a while, you're just like, oh my God, here we go again. Like, now they're under attack again. And oh, they went and retaliated again. And it's just over and over the same story. You know, it's like, just end it and, you know, just move on to something different.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing I liked about The Wire, I think, is they told the story they wanted to tell and they just were done. You know, they didn't drag it out, like watering down the content year after year, just for the purpose of making money in a sense, you know, and that's the feeling I get with things like Big Bang Theory and so on. It's that the story that they were to tell, I mean, I guess it's not really a, or it's like a quasi sequential thing. So the shows can stand alone, but they also will revert back to previous shows in how the progression of relationships develop and everything.
Right.
But one of the big things about a lot of the shows that are on is, you know, they have a good run for, you know, the first, maybe it's like the first year's not so great, but then the season like 2 through 5 is like amazing. And then after a while, then 6 and 7, and then you just have to end it. You know, like Breaking Bad was great too, because with Breaking Bad, I mean, they told the story. They went from the rise, kind of the peak, the fall, and then, you know, the whole thing just kind of played its hand, and it was over. You know, they didn't just try to keep it going one crazy, you know, scenario after another, and then he gets into the hijinks of, you know, now he's into the cocaine, making the best coke on the planet, and then, you know, and whatever it is, right? They just told the story and it ended.
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that had a much longer run, but it felt like it was also like, we're done telling this story. We know Walter White. We've said all we want to say about it, and we're done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know if I really cared for the ending all that much, but I mean, how else does he go out, right?
Yeah. That's cool.
I would say CBS and probably ABC and NBC and others, you know, they all run their shows and they all have their the content that they're putting out. But even like, you know, we were talking with The Expanse and other, you know, again, The Walking Dead and shows that we do watch on television, whether it's cable commercial or commercial over the air, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. Linear.
Linear. Okay. I don't know. Why linear?
Linear because you watch it and you tune in and it plays the same time for everyone, and then it's a linear progression.
But the issue that I have though is, you know, like you said, it's antiquated talking about time slots.
Right.
And, you know, it's Tuesday at 8. I gotta be in front of the sofa, or I'm on the sofa in front of the TV, and if I'm not, I missed my show. I mean, that there's so much technology out there through streaming, through DVRs, and even DVRs seem antiquated to me. But
right, they do too.
DVRs and Blu-ray discs, and I mean, all kinds of stuff, whether, you know, whatever it is. The only thing that might be different is, and like we would watch The Americans, for example. I don't remember what day it ran. Maybe it was on a Sunday or a Monday. But what they would do then is then it would hit streaming the following day. Uh-huh. So all you would do is recalibrate. So if it's on Monday, then for you, that show is every Tuesday. So it's really like people want to watch what they want to watch when they want to watch it. And the thing that what we do a lot of times is if it's Netflix or HBO or any of those, we'll watch those on the Roku box through the apps, right? If it's commercial television, we watch it on our, I have a home theater PC, and we watch it on our home theater PC because it just runs straight through like 47 minutes, no commercials.
Yeah.
Because like of, you know, uBlock Origin or whatever, ad blocking and stuff. And the ads, I don't mind if it was an ad in the beginning, like give me a pre-roll ad, let's say, and then maybe it's a post-roll, but then I walk away and turn it off anyway. But let's say, you know, you force me to sit through a minute or 2 minutes of ad. And a show like The Walking Dead, you might be in the most intense moment. Walkers are coming, you know, Rick Grimes is about to get bit. Oh my God, how's he going to get out of this? And then it's a Tide commercial. I mean, talk about like the highs highs and lows, and then you're just like, oh my God, now I got to sit through this thing, and it's super bright and super loud and super in your face and annoying. And then finally they get back. Every 5 minutes, there's a 5 minute break for commercial. I mean, it's just too much.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and watching things on Netflix, you know, like Orange is New Black or something, or, you know, House of Cards, like you mentioned, watching them for episode after episode, show after show, you know, year after year, whatever it is, you know, you do all this, and now all of a sudden you're back to commercial television. Oh man, talk about like an old model of bringing content to your living room. I mean, and I don't know what the difference is. I mean, what, product placement, a pre-roll ad? I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they would do it. And they do those things too.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see long term how the Netflix model plays out. The $10 that they're receiving per customer, per subscription or whatever, $10 to $15, it's not the it can't be the cost of the actual content that they're putting out. You know, they're operating at a loss. And they're increasing their pie. They're making their pie bigger every single time because they're going to Wall Street and saying, we got more subscribers. We got more subscribers than we predicted we were going to get.
You know, on the other side of it, so if you're looking at, you know, $15 for HBO and $11 for Netflix. I don't know what Hulu is. We don't get it. But I mean, I think it's around $10. And if you have CBS All Access for, you know, whatever that is, $7.99. And before you know it, you're back at square one as far as what you're paying.
Yeah.
Showtime and Stars. And I mean, the whole nine. And when does subscription fatigue enter the mix? Or the other side of it, maybe you subscribe for a show like a Game of Thrones or Black Sails on Stars or something, and you subscribe to that for that one show, you binge that show, and then you unsubscribe, and then you jump over to HBO for Westworld, you binge it, you unsubscribe, and then you go, you know what I mean? And you're just on and off all the time with all these different networks.
I mean, we did it with CBS All Access. We turned it on. It was, what, $5.99 a month. We turned it on for the time that Star Trek Discovery was on, and then Star Trek Discovery ended, and we ended our subscription. You know, there's no harm, no foul. And it's just like, I think Netflix is trying to build a case where there's always going to be something for you to watch. You know, we know what you watched in the past, and we're going to continue to keep your attention and compete with you, compete against your sleep habits. And that's all we're going to compete against. You know, we're going to have such compelling content. It's not going to be all highbrow like HBO, but it's going to be, you know, something for everyone, you know, something not for everyone, but something for everyone, you know, like it'll have different things. So because they don't have one broadcast stream, they can put out, you know, 10 things at the same time and then have 10 different people watch it all at the same time.
You know, I guess my last comment too is I find that a lot of the network type shows, you know, on the linear television, It's almost like drinking Budweiser, right? Or some sort of like kind of bland, made for everybody. They're trying to capture
rail whiskey, right? Instead of a single malt, it's a rail whiskey.
You know, they're trying to like throw a wide net to capture as many eyeballs as possible, rather than giving somebody, like, again, going back to Netflix, there might be some obscure documentary out there about, well, Clarissa and I just watched one, Chasing Happiness or something. I forget what it was, about these people from Germany who bought a school bus and turned it into like a camper and drove it all over North America and all this stuff, you know, and then they finally went to Mexico and the thing was falling apart with the bad roads and they got tired of traveling and then their dog got sick and they had to go back home. But that would never fly on like an NBC on a Tuesday night, you know, week in, week out, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's, so I think it's interesting when we're drawing analogies and you say, this is like Budweiser. I think CBS is more like Budweiser or Bud Light, right?
Yeah.
But Netflix is more like a bar, you know what I mean? Like,
that's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. Because that's where we watch a lot of these obscure things is on Netflix. And when you want that, like, you know, that bourbon oatmeal stout, that whatever, like, that's what, you know, you go for that one thing and you almost chew on it a while and then you digest it.
How close is the Ojai Brewing Company to you?
Ojai, probably in Ojai, I guess.
Yeah, but how close is Ojai to you?
Oh, Ojai? Maybe an hour?
Yeah.
10, something like that? Hour away, have hour
you,
10.
Have you been to the Ojai Brewing Company?
I've never been to Ojai.
You haven't been to Ojai?
No, I know. We got to go. I've always said that too. I'm like, we got to go.
Oh, man. We'll meet in Ojai. We'll do Ojai. Because how close is Solvang to you?
Solvang's like 20.
Yeah.
20 minutes, 25 minutes.
I don't know. I always do. Whenever I do Ojai, I'm like, oh, let's stop over at Solvang. Like, you know? But Ojai Brewing Company, you go in there and it's, I think there are a couple brothers from LA that went up to Ojai and somebody, a cousin had a brewing company, like he had his own beer that he wanted to make and he made it up there. But because they came up from LA, they had a pretty wide ranging palate and they have like 300 plus beers from all over the place. And, you know, it says Ojai Brewing Company and sure, they're happy, they're proud of their half a dozen that they brew on the premises. But the brother from the cousin or brother from LA, he's happy to talk about all of the California beers that are being brewed down in Torrance and stuff like that. So there's a pretty cool SoCal brewery scene of microbrews and all kinds of craft beers. And it's amazing to go in there and to talk to those guys about the overall California craft brewing scene. And I think you guys have that in your Solvang Brewery a little bit too. So we should definitely check that Ojai Brewing Company out too.
Yeah, and Figaro Mountain is right over here. And I mean, there's a lot of good brewery. So quick funny story. So my aunt used to live in Ojai. And this is years ago when like 411 was information and like Google wasn't really as much of a thing as it is today for just looking up, people's phone numbers or whatever it is. So anyway, I call information and they said, "What city, please?" I said, "Ojai." And she says, "Oh, hi. What city, please?" I'm like, no, that's the city.
Who's on first?
Right, exactly. Yeah, anyway, no, I thought this was a cool discussion. Something that I learned a lot tonight about how the TV industry has worked for a long time. And I don't know if we could say that it's going to continue this way. It seems, like you said, a little antiquated. For right now, that's how they're going and that's what they're doing. I don't know. It's we'll see where the future of this model goes.
Well, I think it's up to the advertisers, right? I mean, if the advertisers are still writing the checks, then the media companies and the production companies should still do this for them, you know.
It's like, but wouldn't the advertisers follow the behavior of the viewer or the habits of the viewer?
Yeah, and I mean, it's still even though it's dropping, I guess, you know, this proves that linear television was this strong for this long, that even though it's dropping off, and who knows whether it's dropping off temporarily, how much it's dropping off, I have no insider information on that. But it shows that there's still some, like I said in the beginning, there's still some comfort in the fact that, hey, we're going to write you a check in May. You're going to put shows out in, you know, September. And then come next year, May, we'll decide again how big the checks are, and maybe we'll take a zero off. You know what I mean? Like, well, you know, even if they take a zero off, it's still a lot of money, you know?
Well, so, and I think what they really need to make, and I'm sure, trust me, there's people smarter than me out there who make these decisions. But,
oh, yeah. Smarter than all of us.
Right. But, I mean, I think what they're probably doing or what they need to be doing is looking at who watches television and what's the age demographic. And Nielsen boxes and all that stuff, I think, are just another antiquated way of looking at television watching. And really, my opinion, and I'm just speculating, or my hypothesis maybe, is that probably mid-40s and older, going into, you know, baby boomers and even like their parents that are still alive and all this, they're probably your main TV watchers.
Yeah.
I would say when you're looking at millennials and younger, I mean, you're looking at YouTube and again, Netflix and stuff, but that's where you want to look if you're going to figure out what the next 20 years is going to look like for television watching, because I don't see 19-year-old kids or whatever plopping down on the sofa, channel surfing, trying to find something to watch.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny when you say Nielsen's antiquated. I mean, just think of a sampling, right? Because Nielsen's not in every house. So every time you have a Nielsen house, you're expecting that house to represent, you know, thousands of people's viewing habits.
Right.
And then Nielsen families, they're invaded with the technology. So they put boxes on top of boxes, and then they ask them to fill out things. And they, you know, back 15, 20 years ago, you have to journal. You'd have to write in a journal your viewing habits. You know, now I think they've stepped a little bit and they've made it a little easier for Nielsen families to get it, but it's still a sampling. When you think about the data you get back from direct-to-consumer like Hulu and Netflix,
uh-huh,
and HBO Go, you're
in real time.
Everybody. Yeah, it's everybody. You're not doing a sampling. You're not saying this person represents 100 people. You're saying this person watched this episode of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and he stopped in the middle of the episode, so, and he hasn't watched it since. And then he started watching this other thing. So now, you know, we have the first 15 minutes of this show and then this whole thing that he watched over here. So it's like they have such a huge matrix of data on individual viewers.
It's unbelievable.
It's incredible to throw that into a machine and then say, we're going to make content tailored to this sweet spot of people that we know their actual viewing habits. And we're not going to ask them questions about it because we know what they actually do. So we don't need to ask them questions.
Well, isn't that how House of Cards was written? They took viewing habits of how people were watching and what they were watching and crafted a show around all of that to make like the perfect show in a sense.
Yeah, I don't doubt it.
All right, Ted. So last question. Do you have any 3-word reviews for, I'm not going to say each one, but maybe for an upfront?
No. So upfront's not a 3-word review, but I just, it's something along the lines there, for whom the bell tolls, you know? So it's really all about like, I don't know how long it can go on, but like you said, it feels antiquated. But there's still so much money in the pool that even though the pool is getting smaller, there's still just a lot of money and investment over time. So it is a structure that will continue to consume itself until it's all gone. And it won't, hopefully people will diversify and all the media companies will find better ways to channel this in a right way, but it's a painful situation. So I like the fact that CBS is doing old stuff to keep things going and then new stuff. It kind of sucks that they stuff it all in one night, you know.
Yeah.
I would definitely do something with their schedule, but they have their schedule.
And then last week we said we were going to get back to Black Klansman for your 3-word review. We never did. So you had a whole week.
To
rethink it. Did you come up with anything?
I started back on Twitter though. I was doing a lot more on Twitter this week than I have in previous weeks.
Yeah, sweet.
No, I don't.
Then we got to get back to it.
We'll get back to it again. Okay, so make it a real homework assignment. It's on-air homework assignment for me for next week. I will definitely have a Black Klansman 3-word review.
All right, perfect. Perfect. All right, Ted. Well, yeah, this was, you know, well-informed, you know, and I thought it was really cool how we got into it and, you know, made up well, I learned a lot. So, yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Yay.
All right, my man.
Have a good week.
Yeah, you too, and we will talk to you next week. Love doing it. One of my favorite times. Later.
Me too. See you.
Okay.
Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rogelio for the music.